This is Sight for Sore Eyes. I'm Oriafe Adesina. The National Medical Association, or NMA, is a professional and scientific organization and the largest and oldest national organization representing the interest of African-American physicians and their patients in the United States. Currently representing over 50,000 physicians, the organization was founded in 1895 during an era in U.S. history when the majority of African Americans were disenfranchised and subject to the racially exclusive Jim Crow laws and the segregationist policy of separate but equal that dominated their societal interactions and dictated virtually every aspect of their lives. Because African American physicians were excluded from and denied membership in the American Medical Association, and healthcare inequality was a de facto law of the land, the NMA was created by black doctors and health professionals who found it necessary to establish their own medical societies and hospitals. Founded as an inclusive organization, the NMA extended equal rights and privileges to all physicians. And although it has led the fight for better medical care and opportunities for all Americans, the NMA's primary focus targets health issues related to minority populations and the medically underserved.
Now, 1986, Dr. John Mitchell, who I think is the first black neuro-ophthalmologist, invited me to speak at the NMA ophthalmology section. That was the first time I was there. Mm. And I saw a lively cadre of black ophthalmologists. And I said, whoa.
That was Dr. Lenworth Johnson speaking in episode 3 of this podcast, The History of African Americans in Ophthalmology, about his first experience with the National Medical Association Ophthalmology Section at the NMA National Meeting in 1986. He is also the author of the book, Breaking the Color Line in Medicine, The History of African Americans in Ophthalmology, which is the definitive history of African Americans in our specialty. It is essential reading for anyone interested in the history of the field of ophthalmology. The NMA Ophthalmology Section has a long and storied history. And to learn more about the current organization, I spoke with Drs. Fasica Wareta and Basil Williams, the current and immediate future chairs of the section.
I think it provides a platform to talk about health equity and health disparities in a really significant way. That is one of the goals and focuses of the organization and of the annual meeting. There is dedicated mentorship for underrepresented in medicine trainees, and I think this is one of the most powerful things.
NMA members are all throughout the country at academic centers, private practices, so the network and the friendships are really invaluable. And like Basil said, there's lots of leadership opportunities for young ophthalmologists as well.
Drs. Wareta and Williams are passionate about and focused on moving the NMA ophthalmology section forward in its mission, despite some of the challenges and headwinds faced from the current social and political climates present in our country with respect to DEI. We address this issue and much more in this insightful conversation. This is Sight for Sore Eyes, where we discuss issues of diversity in ophthalmology with a minority perspective. These conversations may not always be comfortable, but they are necessary in order to provide context and perspective and form a foundation on which we can build a better paradigm. Perception is reality, but perspective is the key. Today, I have Drs. Fasica Wareta and Basil Williams, who are the current and immediate future chairs of the NMA's ophthalmology section. Thank you for joining me, and welcome to Sight for Sore Eyes.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
You guys have been on the podcast before. I love talking to you because of your passion, your talent, and the clear-eyed approach you take to the work that you do. So getting started, can you each tell us a bit about your backgrounds in ophthalmology and where you currently practice? And I'll start with you, Fasica.
Sure, yes. I currently am at the Wilmer Eye Institute, and I am the residency program director there, and have been there since I did my residency. Well, I've been there since 2011. And I'm cornea and cataract, as well as I direct our trauma center.
I'm Basil Williams. I am at the Bascom-Palmer Eye Institute. I am an associate program director for the residency there and vice chair for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I just rejoined faculty here about a year ago, so October of 22. I did my residency and retina training here and then did oncology at Wills before eventually coming back after being in practice in Cincinnati for 5 years.
Thanks for sharing that.
So the ophthalmology section is one of the strongest sections. We have members who have been dedicated for decades, making sure that our organization stays active. They've been real champions of DEI.
The NMA ophthalmology section was established jointly with otolaryngology when the two were a combined specialty in 1939 when the NMA met in New York City. The section selected Chester W. Chin as its chairman, the first African-American to become a diplomate of the American Board of Ophthalmology. The Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat section was created as an independent section from all of the other surgical subspecialties and was the first autonomous surgical specialty section of the NMA. The first pre-convention workshop for the section was held in 1971, and the ophthalmology and otolaryngology sections formally split in 1974 with independent sections and programs. The pre-convention meeting has become what is today the annual meeting of the ophthalmology section, held during the NMA National Convention, showcasing excellence in teaching and research and the essential work that is being done to highlight and address health disparities resulting from our history of systemic racism. It is also a place where the next generation of ophthalmologists can come and participate in the meeting, creating formative relationships and experiences that propel them into successful careers in ophthalmology, as we'll see. I asked Dr. Weretta and Williams how they became involved with the NMA ophthalmology section.
For me personally, the way I got involved was when I was a resident, I presented at the Rad Venable Excellence in Research Program, which is part of the National Medical Association ophthalmology section. And so I went to the meeting, presented my research on trachoma, and then met Dr. Olivier, Dr. Miller-Ellis, and it's history since then.
I first participated, I think, in the summer of 2008 as a medical student presenting research, and I got involved because Dr. Olivier had graduated from my medical school and reached out to me and let me know about the program. And so that's what got me actively involved in the NMA. And it was honestly a really, really powerful interaction and opportunity that gave me a platform to present my research, gave me an opportunity to meet a bunch of people in ophthalmology and make a bunch of connections with other Black ophthalmologists who at the time, many were medical students and getting ready to start their residency, and they've become lifelong and career-long friends, mentors, and advisors. So I think it's been really, really powerful in watching the growth of the Rad Venable Excellence in Research Program and the ophthalmology section's continued growth as well has been really exciting.
So you talked about some of the ways NMA supports its members through the Rad Venable for trainees to present research, get plugged into the larger organization. Can you speak more on the benefits of membership in the NMA ophthalmology section, and also who's eligible for membership and how one gets involved as a member?
Yeah, so I can answer the second part first. So how do you become a member, and what does membership look like? So as you mentioned, the NMA represents over 50,000 African-American physicians and the patients that they take care of. So the goal is to take care of or eliminate health disparities, focusing on minoritized populations, particularly in Black patients. And so active membership is for all physicians, MDs or DOs, who are licensed to practice medicine in the U.S., any state or territory. And then associated members or associate membership is for allied health professionals or people who are at academic institutions who want to participate as well. There's also student membership, resident membership, and fellow membership. And there's so many ways to get involved, and I think people do it very much because there's a huge amount of benefits that are there. So first, it's a safe haven for conversation. It allows you to talk about certain challenges that you may have at your job, which I think if you come from a minoritized background practicing medicine, you may be the only or one of the very few people of certain backgrounds in your institution, and talking about similar experiences, talking about patient experiences, talking about certain challenges can be really rewarding and fulfilling. I think it provides a platform platform to talk about health equity and health disparities in a really significant way. That is one of the goals and focuses of the organization and of the annual meeting. There is dedicated mentorship for underrepresented in medicine trainees. And I think this is one of the most powerful things. You know, this is how we got involved in NMA, and having an opportunity to present research was really important for me. It gave me an opportunity and a platform to be on the stage to present. It also gave me an opportunity to learn from people who were senior to me in ophthalmology. And I think, you know, that program has been amazing in terms of the mentorship opportunity. So not only is it presenting your research, but the NEI is present. They go over many of the scholarship opportunities or grant applications that you can go through. It talks about developing a career in research, thinking about K grants and moving forward with that in your career. There are speaker training opportunities to help you feel more comfortable on the podium and teaching you strong ways to present and keeping the audience engaged. So I think there's so many things that happen that provide benefit and support to the membership.
I couldn't agree with you more, Basil. And it really is like a family. NMA members are all throughout the country at academic centers, private practices. So the network and the friendships are really invaluable. And like Basil said, there's lots of leadership opportunities for young ophthalmologists as well. So I initially started leading the cornea symposium when Mildred asked me, and then moved into the secretary role and then the chair. And then when you're organizing the symposiums, it gives you an opportunity to interact with people nationally. So we actually do have a lot of education, cutting edge lectures at our symposium and ongoing CME throughout the year, in addition to the annual meeting. And we also have lots of opportunities to educate patients. Like we have NMAI TV at blackdoctor.org, which features many of our expert ophthalmologists, so we can educate our community about things that lead to blindness.
So yeah, I'm going to co-sign on your statement that it's a haven for people to come and feel supported and feel like they have a place to talk about what they're experiencing, what they're going through from a professional standpoint, also from a personal standpoint. There are things that we experience as minoritized groups that other folks just don't. And having a place to be able to talk about our experiences and share ideas, and sometimes just offload and get catharsis. I mean, there's nothing better than that sometimes. It's really helpful to be able to have that kind of place to do that.
Be with you, Arthur.
You know, one thing that was also really cool that I don't think I internalized immediately was going to the meeting and seeing Black ophthalmologists who were just amazing, who were all over the academy, who were presenting everywhere, who were wonderful people, and who spent the time to shake my hand at a meeting, get to know me, ask me questions. I remember when I was very early in medical school, I went to ARVO and I went to Academy, and I'd go up and introduce myself to a bunch of people who had just been on the podium, and they kind of looked at me and they shook my hand and they kept on walking. Like, why is this guy bothering me? which I understand. But at the NMA meeting, you know, it's so much more of a family feel and a community feel that, you know, I remember talking to Adrienne Scott the first time and being like, oh, she's this retina faculty member at Wilmer who's like doing really well, and she's on the podium. And I'm like this nobody medical student, and she like spent time talking to me and getting to know me and wanting to invest in me and breathe encouragement into me. And it was something that was so powerful. And even seeing Tamara Fountain, met her at NMA and then saw her at Academy later. And I go over to her and I like try to reintroduce myself. And she's like, yeah, I remember who you are. We talked at NMA. We talked about this, this, and this. And I was like, oh, okay. So it was just a really kind of a different feeling and really made me feel like I belonged in the space.
You know, that sentiment, I want to piggyback on that. It's the sentiment that you get in spaces and organizations that were created by minorities to support ourselves, right? You know, we talked about HBCUs in another podcast episode and how that differs from majority institutions, in that when you go to majority institutions, you know, you go into the freshman year of college and classes, it's almost like a weed out, right? Trying to figure out who the cream of the crop is, if you could make it, make the cutter or not, as opposed to like an HBCU where their job is to make sure everybody succeeds. They bring everybody along, like it's a family, a group that's trying to make everyone succeed. And I think that's the sentiment that you're speaking to, that we try to promote at the NMA Ophthalmology section through the different resources that we have to support ourselves and each other.
The NMA Ophthalmology section is one of a number of organizations in ophthalmology working to increase diversity in and patient access to the field of ophthalmology. This includes the American Academy of Ophthalmology, the Association of University Professors of Ophthalmology, and multiple subspecialty and state ophthalmology organizations and societies. With all of these groups, what sets NMA apart? Simply put, its longevity and purpose. Issues of diversity and access are existential for the NMA ophthalmology section, and it has been working to increase diversity in ophthalmology since its inception, long before it became popular and then unpopular, more on that later, to do so. This includes the work done by the Rab Venable Excellence in Research Program that was started in 2000, many years before other organizations started their own diversity initiatives. To learn more about Rab Venable, I recommend you listen to Episode 5, which addresses the pivotal role it has and continues to play in recruiting young URIMs to ophthalmology. As we continue our conversation, Drs. Wareta and Williams speak to the legacy and purpose of the NMA ophthalmology section, with its foundational role and singular position in ophthalmology, addressing issues of diversity and access in our field.
You touched on a subject that I want to talk about a bit more. You know, we are ophthalmologists, we are eye doctors, we are part of the larger family of ophthalmologists in the country and in the world. What is the relationship between NMA ophthalmology and the larger American Academy of Ophthalmology Association? How do we interact? What is the relationship between us as organizations?
We have such a supportive, symbiotic relationship. So the Minority Ophthalmology Mentoring Program, sponsored by the AUPO and the Academy, several of our NMA key leaders like Mildred Olivier, Keith Carter were essential in starting that program. And they really worked closely to make this program the success that it is today. And I think arguably the MOM program and the Rab Venable Excellence in Research are two of the best pathway programs in all of medicine, not just ophthalmology. And both of them have grown exponentially. A lot of our NMA faculty are mentors for the MOM program. The NMA organization supports the MOM program annually as well. And then vice versa, our NMA organization gets a lot of support from the American Academy of Ophthalmology. Every year, we have a symposium at the annual meeting, and a lot of the leaders at an NMA, like Tamara Fountain, Paul Lee, the leaders of AAO, will participate in our symposiums. We've done joint symposiums together. DEI has really been, in the last 3 years, a focus of the Academy. I mean, the MOM before that, but then they really looked at disparities in eye care and called on many members of the National Medical Association to join that task force, which was absolutely wonderful. So, you know, Maurice Knight, Kristen Wanyu, Angela Elam led that task force. So these are all NMA members and former Rab Venable Excellence in Research participants as well. So leaders in health equity. So I feel our relationship has been wonderful and continues to be.
You know, I serve as the AO counselor for NMA. You know, how does that position interface to AAO, and what is the purpose of that individual's job?
Yeah, so at the annual meeting in both and at mid-year forum, the AAO puts together some things that are really important to the organization, to the ophthalmology community as a whole, and they try to reach out to all the affiliated organizations and groups. And I think this gives everyone not only an ear into hearing what's going on with the AAO and with the ophthalmology community as a whole, but it also gives them kind of an opportunity and a voice to carry the things that are happening in the organizations to the AAO. So it's kind of a two-way method of communication that I think is really powerful. So that way we can all stay on the same page.
And also the AAO allows for each organization to nominate someone for the leadership development program. In 2022, I participated in the AAO leadership development program when I was nominated by the NMA, which is a wonderful program, taught me all about advocacy. And my project was a DEI project aimed at assessing barriers to faculty development in the underrepresented medicine faculty with the survey. And Terry Young was my mentor on that. So I think that program is essential. And every 2 years, Academy also us to nominate someone for that. So hopefully, Basil, you'll be next. And like Basil said, the mid-year forum is a wonderful opportunity to continue to meet leaders of academy. There's many NMA members who attend the mid-year forum each year. And so, again, we sort of have this really nice relationship where we support each other. And the topics that NMA and AAO care about are the same in terms of increasing diversity within ophthalmology.
Yeah, you know, Fasika, you just mentioned your project for the Leadership Development Program, the LDP. And I think that right there is really an example of the NMA and the AAO working together. NMA nominating you for this program, you participating in the program, working on a project that's related to some of the goals of the NMA in terms of career advancement. This is another way that the NMA supports its members. I remember a couple of the webinars or Zoom sessions that you and Dr. Young had put together, just kind of helping understand the landscape of what it takes to advance faculty advancement in academic medicine. Because I think that's not a conversation that happens in a lot of arenas. A lot of ways to kind of advance, get promoted, seek out leadership opportunities. I don't think that's always spoken about out in the open. So, you know, I think that's something that I found to be incredibly educational and important. And so kudos to you, and also kudos to the NMA and the AAO kind of working together to create opportunities for you to be able to put together a project like that.
Absolutely. Awesome. And then in my class was Mia Woodward from University of Michigan, who does a lot of health disparities work as well. And then based on my project, then we sort of had a spinoff, and her project was representing Cornea Society, and working together and with your mentorship, Basil, and with Jessica Randolph, we were able to, working with the Eye Bank Association of America and Cornea Society and the NMA, create this pathway program for residents to attend our Cornea Society meeting. So a program for underrepresented residents interested in cornea. And so, again, that's something where without the connections and everyone working together, it wouldn't have been as successful. So we just did our second year, and hopefully we'll be continuing it, following the model of retina, as you have, as well as other subspecialties.
I love how the cross-pollination and crosstalk breeds these programs and opportunities to increase diversity in our field. It's really, really inspiring, really exciting to see. You mentioned a bit about the annual meeting before. That was my introduction into NMA ophthalmology, being invited to moderate an ophthalmology symposium there. Loved it. Loved my experience there. Going to be going for the foreseeable future as long as God allows me to be on this earth. Let's talk more about the annual meeting, what it is, the format of the annual meeting, what it allows people to do, and the benefits it gives them, and why it's so important to the NMA ophthalmology section.
Yeah, it's really one of my favorite meetings of the year. It's always in late July or early August. And this is the whole National Medical Association meeting. So you'll never see as many Black doctors in one space ever. This year, it's going to be in New York. And some ophthalmologists have been attending the meeting and bringing their families for so many years. So they have a camp for kids. So you can imagine how inspirational that is. For example, children attending the meeting. And our ophthalmology section usually runs Saturday to Monday, as we have different subspecialties as well as comprehensive topics covered by amazing speakers such as yourself and Dr. Williams. And, you know, really about the current state of the art lectures. We usually have a wet lab. Like last year, we did a minimally invasive glaucoma surgery wet lab, which is particularly important in our patient population. And it's just a wonderful meeting. Like you said, you feel so welcome. And then really what's also incredibly special is the number of trainees that are at the meeting. So with the Rad Venable Excellence in Research Program, the NEI funds, I think it was over 100 students who were able to come last year, present their research, interact with us. That has been incredible as well.
Yeah, I think it's an unbelievably powerful meeting. It's obviously kind of the educational center of the organization on an annual basis. And, you know, we talked about the fellowship that the meeting provides and the opportunity to meet trainees. I know for sure that there were times in my residency where a patient would make a comment specifically about my race or something like that. And I wasn't quite sure how I was going to navigate it or what to do. And I reached out to a couple of the other people who had participated in Rav Venable with me to hear their experience and to understand how they navigated those situations. And so I think now with over 100 people in that program, I think it really provides a fantastic network of people to be able to fellowship together during the annual meeting, but also build relationships that are going to be long lasting throughout their training in ophthalmology and throughout their careers in the future. So it really provides a very, very strong foundation for ophthalmology moving forward. And I think there's some other interesting ideas that are potentially possible through the NMA meeting. You know, as Fossica mentioned, this is for the entire NMA. And so the ophthalmology section has the opportunity to interact with other sections. And I think in general, the way ophthalmology is on a lot of campuses, we kind of do our own thing. We're off to our own side. But I think, you know, there's some really cool opportunities to interact with family medicine or internal medicine or endocrinology to put together some kind of diabetes workshops or something along those lines. So there's some really good opportunities for collaboration at this kind of meeting where it's geared towards minoritized populations.
Definitely. It's a great meeting. It's a great place to collaborate and work together and really push forward minorities that are coming up in ophthalmology and in medicine as trainees. And even allied folks, like you said, it's a good place to see all that happening. It's really inspiring. When you walk around and see all these folks that look like you, your chest just swells up and it gives you motivation to go back and continue doing the work that you're doing from a professional standpoint, from a personal standpoint, from a mentoring standpoint, sort of that juice you need in the middle of the year to get through and push on to the rest of the work you do that year.
And the beautiful thing is that the past chairs, are, you can see their incredible dedication. They do not stop coming to the meeting. So Nanita Brown, Benjil Edgehill, Chastity Singleton, Dan LaRoche, Clifton Hay, Shelby Wilkes, you know, they're there every year supporting future chairs and really just the backbone. And actually, there's a new program run by Dr. Orice Knight and Dr. Pavamani Claudio have done the Pathways to Success program, which has really also expanded the mentorship provided for the residency selection.
All right, we're going to switch gears a little bit and get a little bit serious in our conversation, having you guys to discuss the NMA ophthalmology section and DEI and what it means to our specialty and our patients is important and your perspectives are important. So I want to get them on the next topic we're going to discuss. You know, we're in interesting times where there are many people with straight faces and all sincerity that are openly and vigorously against DEI and its associated initiatives. You know, it feels like we've almost done a full reversal or turn from the momentum that came out of the social justice movement in 2020, when everybody was all about DEI and setting up DEI initiatives and programs at the places of work and academic institutions. We're now in a place where DEI programs are being disbanded because they've become illegal in certain states where governors have made laws against it. You know, those with the loudest voices, even if they're wrong and not in the majority, often get to tell the narratives and push policy and eventually write history. Even if most folks agree with the principles of DEI and what it stands for, if you don't speak up actively and out loud against this anti-DEI rhetoric, you might as well be co-signing it and supporting it, right? You got to be actively anti-racist. It's not a passive action. I'd love to know what your thoughts are, what the NMA ophthalmology session stances on things like the recent SCOTUS decision and this backlash against DEI and the argument that it promotes reverse racism and discrimination. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, the SCOTUS ruling was devastating for us working in the DEI space, but we shall prevail. So the American Academy of Ophthalmology, Dr. Lisa Kelly, who is an NMA member and she chairs the Minority Ophthalmology Mentoring Executive Committee, came out with a beautiful statement. And it basically says that, you know, we understand the ruling, but that we are still committed to DEI and the Minority Ophthalmology Mentoring Program and the other DEI initiatives that we have been dedicated to are fully lawful. And we're not changing the structure to the program, she says, and we are committed to continuing to support the mentorship of these students. So I think for us in the NMA, and we're taking the same stance. I think people have to remember the ugly history of systemic racism in this country and why it's started, it's because Black physicians were not allowed in the AMA. When you think about why are there only four historically Black colleges and universities, why only one of them has a home ophthalmology program?
Dr. Beretta is referring to the four HBCU medical schools currently in the United States.
Again, it's the ugly history of racism in this country. So we've had to alter some of our programs in terms of the language and so forth. So I mentioned I work at Hopkins. We had a diversity scholars program, which I had to rename and sort of reformat. But I think that commitment to diversity, and not only race and ethnicity, but gender, socioeconomic status, you know, supporting first generation college graduates, like we're not going to stop. And I think we're still fully committed to the NMA ophthalmology section. At the residency level, we're still encouraging the holistic review of the application and the distance traveled. And so acknowledging it was a step backwards, still stay strong in our commitment to DEI and embracing diversity. And again, remembering the long-lasting legacy and the effects of racism in this country that it continues to have.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's a really powerful statement. And I think that's huge important to not try and take a look at where we are now without appropriately assessing how we got here. And so there's a lot of conversation about reverse racism or discrimination or whatever, which is funny if it wasn't such a serious thing. You know, the same language that had originally been used to give advantages to other groups is the same language that they say, well, now we can't favor any people who have been affected by the structural damage that has been caused, is almost laughable if it wasn't for the significance of the implications. But that being said, affirmative action is one single tool to try and overcome a lot of the historical injustices that have happened. And there's many other ways to get around this. And I think the goal at this point is to try and make sure that we provide equitable educational opportunities. And from the medicine standpoint, obviously, if we think about our ultimate goal being to take care of patients, thinking about taking care of all patients, that includes Black patients, that includes minoritized patients. And in order to do that, we need to have a workforce that is able to match the look, the sound, the culture of those patients. And so I think that's something that's really, really critical. I think people also come up with the statement of, well, we don't want to replace quality by diversity, or we don't want to use diversity as a way to water down what we have out there. And I think some of that comes from fear. Some of that comes from lack of education. Some of that comes from willful negligence or willful ignorance as to what quality diversity means. So I think just because you're increasing diversity does not mean you are decreasing quality. I think that's the first thing that has to be said, and has to be said over and over, because I think people naturally make that assumption. And I think you have to really look at yourself in the mirror and understand why you're making a comment like that, because I think there is a lot to be said from diversity in terms of increasing ideas, improving quality of publications, and improving quality of care to patients as well. And so I think this is something that is extremely important. I think we are doing a good job in the ophthalmology space of increasing the pipeline through a lot of means. We talked about some of the mentoring programs to give people opportunities for mentorship from an early stage in their medical school careers. But I think one of the biggest things the Academy is doing and National Medical Association is doing is just bringing up the idea of ophthalmology early. So it's giving people exposure. It's giving people the opportunity to do research in that field so that way they can become competitive applicants. It's not a matter of not being qualified or not being able to do it. Ophthalmology is one of the most exclusive subspecialties, and without specific knowledge or access to it, you might not have a way to know about it. And so, especially if you think about a lot of the HBCUs, where there's a significant focus on primary care medicine. And I think ophthalmology really does provide primary care to people. And so I think just bringing up the idea of ophthalmology early on is something that is significant and important and allows people to be stronger candidates, but not because it's giving them any sort of undue benefit or kind of helping them along in ways that they would not be able to do well. So I think that's something that's really significant. And I think if we look at it from the higher education level, there's a lot of stuff that we can do as an educational group to try and improve things. So as Fossica mentioned, we can think about holistic admission criteria, which is hugely important. We definitely need to make sure that the admissions committees are diverse. I think it's one of the most interesting things whether or not people are outwardly self-centered or not, people are always looking for somebody that they have a connection with and people who are similar to them. I've seen that when I've interviewed with researchers, they very much like the idea of other researchers. And I think that's fantastic. People who are really excited about being busy clinically are similarly looking for somebody who's interested in that. And I think that's natural. And I think that's great. So I think if you have diverse admissions committees, diverse interview committees, then I think that allows for better perspective of who we want to take into our programs. It also changes the definition of what it means to be a good fit for a program or an institution. If you have a diverse group that's doing interviews, then a fit means something completely different. I think we have to consider about the financial barriers to education. I think that disproportionately impacts people of minoritized backgrounds, and that's something that can make a huge difference in the education process. I know plenty of people who have changed their minds about higher education opportunities because they did not feel like their family had the resources to help. And I think we need to work on outreach and recruitment for earlier levels, catching people before they become disillusioned by the education system, disillusioned by getting suspended at higher rates for similar actions and various other things that happen throughout our elementary and middle school years. Another thing that I think we could consider, and there's a lot that goes into this, is looking at legacy preferences and legacy admissions. As we know, those tend to favor people who come from more affluent backgrounds and plays a role in probably limiting some aspect of diversity in our higher education system. So I think there's a lot of things that we can do, and none of that is looking at race-specific stuff. I think if we look at diversity as a whole and we think about sexual orientation, gender, race, ethnicity, primary language, country of origin, parental educational attainment, and various other things, I think we're trying to diversify our educational population. We're trying to diversify our medical population. We're trying to diversify our ophthalmology providers as well through all of those means. And I think, you know, by doing that, by creating a workforce that is more like the people that we are trying to serve, we will do a better job taking care of patients. And that's without race being the primary or a primary factor. I think all of those things together really play a role in diversity, and truthfully, will have a significant benefit and boost for minoritized populations as well, without just the sole focus of race. So I think there's a lot that can be done, a lot that will be done. This is something that was a hit, but is by no means a knockout punch. And so we'll just keep on moving forward like we always have.
Everything you said is true. You know, I agree wholeheartedly. You have to know where you came from to understand why you are where you are, and to prevent you from making the same mistakes moving forward when it comes to racial segregation, discrimination, and the systemic racism that produced the situation we find ourselves in terms of the lack of diversity in medicine and ophthalmology and how that affects patient care. And you said it, Basil, you were right on this whole idea about diversity watering down the talent pool. Like, you wouldn't be there if it wasn't for DEI or affirmative action. You know, I might take you a step further. I think you might not really understand what that statement means, but in and of itself, that statement is patently racist. Because what you're saying is that diversity, bringing in folks of different backgrounds that aren't the majority, somehow equates to lower quality, lack of qualification. They aren't good enough. And the only reason you're saying that is because they look, act, maybe are different from a physical characteristic standpoint. And that, I mean, are you telling me that me, you, and Vasika somehow are watering down the talent pool? I dare you to tell me that. Doing the things that we're doing and having the capabilities that we have and taking the good care of patients that we're doing and promoting ophthalmology, not just to minority, but to everybody, right? And the idea that diversity is discriminatory is an oxymoron. It's diversity, it's equity, it's inclusion. You're trying to bring everybody in. A rising tide lifts all boat. Increasing the health of one group increases the health of the groups around it. It lifts everybody up. So obviously, we're in a bit of an echo chamber with ourselves right now, but I want everybody who can listen to this to promote these ideas and these thoughts that need to be promoted. And there are ways, like you said, this is a blow to diversity, a blow to URAMs in medicine and ophthalmology and higher education, but we will prevail. There are ways to address these issues and move forward in a substantive and effective way.
As you said, we've heard these comments said to all of us in terms of, you know, DEI shouldn't replace excellence. And I invite those who make the comment to come to our NMA ophthalmology meeting, because there you will see Black excellence. And as you mentioned, the systemic racism has resulted in disparities in rates of glaucoma and rates of blindness in our communities. And in the literature, it shows that physicians from underrepresented backgrounds are more likely to care for minoritized patients, sicker patients, indigent patients. So it really is our duty to take care of our community, which has disproportionately high rates of disease, more severe disease, worse outcomes after surgeries, more complications. So I feel as outstanding Black doctors, it is our duty. And again, this is what the NMA ophthalmology represents.
Beautiful. I love it. So as we move towards wrapping up our conversation, you're obviously the chair and future chair of the NMA ophthalmology section. What are those things that you are doing or plan to do during your 10 years to promote diversity or promote initiatives that will get us to the point that we want to get to?
As I mentioned, a lot of our NMA members have been absolutely critical in the DEI movement. They've spent a lot of time and energy mentoring. That tax is not to be taken lightly. And I think one of my goals as the chair was to recognize our outstanding members for the hard work they have done over the years and continue to do. So at our last NMA section, we had an award ceremony where we recognized mentors, those who are doing research in health disparities for scientific excellence. The other thing is growing in terms of having the next generation of leaders. So again, we mentioned there's been a core group. And so now involving new members in our executive committee so that they can carry the torch forward, like Dr. Williams, yourself in the leadership, I think is critical. And we do want representation at all levels. So in private practice, taking care of our minoritized patients, also in academic centers, on residency selection committees, as program chairs, because if we're not at the table, again, we can't continue our mission of increasing DEI within ophthalmology. And, you know, again, we're one of the least diverse out there in the bottom three in terms of diversity. So there's still a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and I would say that there has not been a chair of the NMA ophthalmology section that would be great to follow. But in particular, I'm not excited to be following Fasica because of the great work that she has done through the organization that she does on a daily basis, the impact of her research, the impact of the role that she has as a program director at one of the premier academic institutions in the country. And so I just want to say kudos to you, Fasica, for all the work that you have done and continue to do. It really is inspirational being recognized at AAO for your work as a program director. It's inspirational. And so from my perspective, I think looking forward to my opportunity for leadership in the future, I hope to build on many of the things that you've done. You've done a remarkable job of diversifying the leadership of the NMA ophthalmology section, of recruiting some of the younger members who are up and coming stars in the field of ophthalmology. Part of my idea is to take all of these people who are in the Rab Venable program, who have now been going into ophthalmology programs and reaching back out as people are in their first or second year of faculty or in private practice elsewhere, and going back out to them and kind of bringing them back into the fold and increasing our membership that way. I also really want to solicit ideas from some of the younger members about ways that we can provide educational content to Black ophthalmologists that they do not have access to in other avenues. The academic content has been fantastic, second to none, in each of our meetings. And you've put together, Fasica, some amazing sessions on disparities in health equity, as you mentioned, hoping to grow and continue those. And also talk about other ways to grow and be a leader in ophthalmology, thinking about what it means to be on a board somewhere and other ways to develop and advance your career. So we have excellent opportunities for our trainees and also excellent opportunities for our young physicians. So that way we can build their careers in the academic arena and in the private practice arena, so we can continue to grow in excellence. I think, you know, that's one of the challenging things when you're one of the junior faculty members at an institution, there are very, very few people from minoritized backgrounds who are in high levels of leadership. And so being able to get some of that education at this meeting and to help you grow and develop, I think will be really powerful too. So I'm very much excited for the opportunities in the future.
And I'm thrilled, Orefe, that you're joining the board as well. And I know you have amazing ideas of how to promote academic ophthalmologists from underrepresented medicine backgrounds and promoting DEI and neuro-ophthalmology. So I think it's going to be a great year, great 2 years.
Absolutely.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to the opportunity to work with both of you. And you know, your words are inspiring. Your actions are inspiring. Your talent is inspiring. It's wonderful. As we wrap up, any brief final thoughts that you want people to know about NMA or the work that's being done?
Sure. If you have a question of how you can make a difference in health disparities or health equity, if you have a question about how you can improve diversification of ophthalmology, support the NMA. That could be financially with donations. That can be showing up to the meeting. It can be giving members of the organization a voice in your institution, state society, practice, or wherever. I think that's something that is definitely a powerful opportunity. Also, if you're a naysayer, as Fossica mentioned, and you feel like DEI is not that important, also come out, learn what we're about, actually see what this is. And I have very strong feelings that you will change your mind by understanding what the actual goals are and what we actually mean. So NMA is a wonderful organization doing a lot of great work. I've been very, very fortunate to be a part of it, to have learned and developed and grown up in ophthalmology through the Rab Venable program and through the NMA. I've been very fortunate to meet wonderful people like you who are carrying the torch for the future of ophthalmology. And so I would love for other people to get access to those kind of blessings in the same way that I have.
Couldn't agree more. And it really makes me happy you're doing this podcast, because it's sad that a lot of people don't even know what the NMA is. So we need to know the history. We need to honor legends like Dr. Maurice Rab and Dr. Howard Venable, and many of the Black ophthalmologists who are pioneering innovators and researchers and contributed so much to patient care and teaching in this country. So everyone should know what the NMA is. And like Dr. Williams said, you should come to our meetings and support us.
I could not agree more. Dr. Pascual Arreta, Dr. Basil Williams, thank you very much for joining me for this conversation. It's important. It was fun. Hopefully for those out there, it's informative. Please come to our meeting. Please come and engage us. Please ask us questions. We want to teach you. We want you to learn. We want to cross-pollinate ideas. We just want our patients to be treated, taken care of better. We want our specialty to be more diverse and our country to benefit from that. Thank you again so much. I look forward to hopefully revisiting our conversation in the future, giving updates on what you've been doing and the impact that it's been having. So again, thank you. God bless and take care.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
The NMA Ophthalmology Section is a force for good in the field of ophthalmology. Its strategic and formative relationships with the parent NMA organization and the American Academy of Ophthalmology position it at the forefront of not only championing DEI initiatives in ophthalmology, but producing real, substantive, and tangible changes for the benefit of patients and the next generation of ophthalmologists. Drs. Arreta, Williams, and many others are testaments to the legacy of those who have gone before them, and while there are certainly struggles, obstacles, and headwinds to be faced, they have overcome more than this in the past, and most certainly have the mettle, resourcefulness, and resolve to push forward successfully into the future. It's who they are. It's what they do. That's our episode for today. I want to thank Dr. Fossica Arreta and Basil Williams for joining me for this wonderful conversation. As always, we appreciate feedback from our listeners. Please send these to the iDoctorPodcasts@gmail.com. Please stay tuned for future episodes of Sight for Sore Eyes. Until then, take care and see you again next time.